Hello and welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. This is the Boston edition. We're still in Boston and we wanted to cover AWS Reinforce. Yes, Shilpi and I were at AWS Reinforce, which is the cloud security conference from Amazon. It was hosted in Boston and we're still here in Boston talking about all things cloud security to the community members while we were at Reinforce. Now, for people who may not be aware, it is the only cloud security conference from Amazon. There is no cloud security conference from Azure or Google Cloud yet. I'm hopeful they would start one as well soon, or their forward cloud stack is probably the one that you should be attending. If you haven't attended one, definitely check out their YouTube channel. So this episode, Shilpi and I basically go through all the updates, and surprise, surprise, spoiler alert, there was no new product launch, at least from a security perspective, at the Reinforce. There might be some at reInvent, as they always do. They wait for the big conference of the year for the big releases. However, there were feature updates, which we go through in the episode. As we go through the episode, we also talk about what does it mean for a practitioner to know about these new updates that come in. The highlight for me was a malware protection one, and I won't spoil it for you, so I'll let you listen to the entire episode and what does it mean. We also had a Twitter space that we ran before on the day, and a few of the community members joined in, spoke about what it meant for them, what they think the new releases mean for the community. I would leave a link for that Twitter space on the show notes as well for you to be able to go and check that out. I think definitely worthwhile to listen on that conversation as well, just to hear different perspective of what other people in the industry were thinking about this update from AWS Reinforce. As always, I appreciate all the feedback, and our special thank you to everyone who came and said hello to us, took pictures with us, and gave me a hug. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for doing that. I'm looking forward to anyone who's attending Black Hat next week as well. If we get to see you at Black Hat or DevCon, we will be at the Cloud Village. We will be at the Blue Team Cloud Security Panel. There are a few panels that are running as well, so you would definitely hang out with us. If you're going to be attending, feel free to message us and we'll definitely organize a time to come and say hello in person and give you a hug and maybe take a picture as well. So that would be pretty awesome. I look forward to saying hello to most of you who are attending Black Hat and DEF CON. And for everyone else, I will definitely be bringing back a recap of the events from the day or in some way or form and anything cloud security that came out of the Black Hat and DEF CON conversation. And if you are there, I'll say hi. And as always, please feel free to share this with anyone who may not have attended AWS Reinforce and want to know about what was basically spoken about and what should be the highlights. And while you're there, make sure you can give us a thumbs up or a like or a review on iTunes, Spotify. By the way, did you know that Spotify allows you to play videos now? So now you can actually see us in action. If you're watching this on Spotify, you can actually watch the video same way it was on YouTube. You can definitely check that out. So hopefully enjoy the episode of watching it and not just listening it if you're on Spotify. But for an Apple Podcast, you can still have the amazing audio experience that we've had so far before. And thank you so much for supporting us and leaving us a review and rating as well. All right, that sums up the episode intro. I'll let you get into the episode. And this is hosted by Shilpi. So you can always give us some feedback about how awesome she is. And I'm sure she'll appreciate that as well. I will talk to you in the next episode. See ya. Peace.
Hey, Ashish, how are you?
Good.
I'm gonna pretend that, you know, like we aren't in the sort of in the same space. It's as I was saying, this is yours is like the lounge room edition and mine is the windowsill
definitely
edition.
But
at
we
the
have
moment
enough sunlight coming on each other to make sure that people get the most of it. So thank you for having me, Shilpi, and thank you for hosting the AWS Reinforce 2022 recap and highlight as well. I think you have a lot of things to talk about. I have a lot of things to talk about, so let's get into it as well.
Definitely. So AWS Reinforce, I just thought, you know, a good way to start this would be just to set the scene in terms of what is AWS Reinforce. So it's been around since 2019. And I think, Ashish, you actually attended the first one. Is that right? In person?
I did it 2019. That was still fresh memories of all the thousands of people who turned in and we had to wait for hours in lines. But yeah, definitely yeah. It was a great event.
Amazing. And from your perspective, like obviously you attended the first one in 2019 and now we're in 2022 and you've attended, I think, the only two in-person AWS Reinforce events that have happened. Because for perspective, 2020 was canceled, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, and 2021 was virtually hosted. So this was actually the second in-person event. How did they both compare to you? Because you've actually attended both of them in person. Were they different, exactly the same? Obviously the same amazing people. I think that's what makes these conferences amazing, is actually getting to meet a lot of the practitioners and have those conversations. But what was different for you for this one?
There were definitely a lot fewer people. And I think we touched on this in the Twitter space as well. The conversation was more intimate. We definitely felt there was a lot more I guess, because there was a lot of leadership change as well from 2019. Now, Steve Schmidt, who used to be the CISO for AWS, is now the CISO for Amazon, which is, I guess, a parent company. There's a new CISO for AWS, which is CJ Moses. Both of them did a great job for explaining security, how they do it in Amazon, and what their thing is and the theme would be moving forward. So I definitely felt conversations more intimate. I got to talk to a lot of people. We get to meet a lot of people from the podcast as well. I'm really super grateful that they came and said hello as well. So yeah, that was pretty awesome. So yeah, I'd probably say more intimate is probably the highlight out of the whole thing. And I'm sure we're going to go into the keynotes and everything else as well as we kind of go through this.
Definitely, yes. And I think that's what everyone has been saying, that though it was a few people, it was really intimate, and everyone actually got the opportunity to catch up and having some really like deep, meaningful conversation. So going into, I guess, the keynote, for me, really some of the biggest takeaways, I think from the beginning, was Stephen Smith's kind of talking about this whole concept of security being baked in from the beginning, not something that is like an afterthought. And I know there's over the industry, there is a lot of conversation about, actually having security from the beginning built into the code, the whole conversation about infrastructure as code, developer-first security, all of these things that was really coming through. They did make mention of the Security Guardian program, which I don't think is a new concept. I know they've mentioned it a few years ago as well. And these are people who are not actually reporting into the security team, but into the software development engineers. Is that something that you're hearing across as well?
So I guess for context, maybe just quickly setting the scene, because I don't know how many people know about what AWS Reinforce is as well. So AWS Reinforce is the annual cloud security conference from Amazon, and it's primarily attended by people who are cloud security engineers, cloud security, I guess, enthusiasts who are trying to get into cloud security architects, cloud security decision makers, GRC people as well. So a lot of people who are from the cybersecurity space and work actively in cloud or want to work actively in cloud are the kind of people who log in and maybe tune into AWS Reinforce virtually last year and this year in person. It is a YouTube channel available as well, so you can definitely go check that out. We can leave the link for that in the show notes. Now, coming back to your question about the Security Champions program, or as they call it, Security Guardian. Steve Schmidt did talk about it last year, but it was like a really, I would say, less than 5 minute mention in, and that too right towards the end of his keynote. But this year, within the first 10 minutes, there was already on to, by the way, on the side note, I did want to call out Steve Schmidt wore a ADHD, it's not a disability t-shirt, which I thought was pretty awesome that he was using his platform to call out the, I guess, send the message across. And I thought it was pretty awesome. So within the first 5 minutes or 10 minutes of the conversation of keynote, he basically announced the Security Guardians program and how Security Champions program is quite crucial to enable developers to talk about security quite early and not to be an afterthought. And later on in the keynote, I also wanted to give a shout out to Lena. She's the CISO for MongoDB. I think her name is Lena Smart. She did a great job. Also, I loved the humor she put in being a Scottish lady. She did an amazing job of putting the a bit of humor into the conversation as well. And she spoke about the Security Champions program they're running in MongoDB for the past couple of years. It definitely seemed like there was a theme for, which makes me feel a bit funny because DevSecOps was something that we used to talk about quite a bit for Security Champions program. And now suddenly cloud security, which in a lot of ways has been there for a little over 10 years, but it's still quite new compared to the rest of the application security space. And it's also interesting to see, and this could be a prediction, it would be interesting to see how much longer before the cloud security and the application security kind of converge into product security. Because as a CISO in the previous companies that I've worked for, we have had product security teams, not cloud security teams or application security teams as two separate things. They used to be in the beginning. But now we definitely have a lot more product security conversation where AppSec people and the cloud security people sit together, have conversations. But obviously, different stages for different organizations where there is a space for them individually. But yeah, it was really interesting to see as a team that there is a lot more conversation about bringing security to the left for cloud security as well, and not just for application security.
That's very right. And I think talking to a lot of people, it sounds like a lot of people are seeing this as a natural progression or a natural evolution of where things are going. Obviously, initially, a lot of people, migrated to cloud. It happened really quickly. It was, good days. And then it's like, okay, we need to secure this. And now, rather than an afterthought, I think a lot of people are thinking about, okay, how about we just start doing it good from the beginning? So people are seeing it as a natural evolution, but as you correctly said, a lot of people will be at various points of this journey. And a lot of companies might not be, developing their own code as well. I think another thing, and I know you, this is probably pretty close to your heart because I know you started your career in IAM. There was a lot of conversation around IAM and least privilege. I know Stephen Smith did say overtly permissive environments guarantees you headaches, which I think everyone will agree with. So that's what he went into. There was a lot of conversation around that as well. And it's all about, again, baking that security into your CI/CD pipeline, into your SDLC. What were your thoughts in regards to that? Is that something that you think is still relevant? Does it give you headaches? What are your thoughts around that?
I definitely feel that it definitely gives you headaches. I'll agree with what Steve said on the keynote. I also believe that I am, because it's been known for some time that identity is the new parameter for the cloud in general. And as people used to think, oh, my network or my endpoint is the one which should be more the more focused. But we definitely have, let's just say, a focus which is quite determined into the world of, hey, let's reshape the conversation for, if you kind of take a step back, and I'm kind of all over the place, but I don't know, it'll make sense as I'm kind of talking about it. If you look at the most security incident root causes are lead credentials, and lead credentials primarily are linked with identity. Identity is also linked to SSRF, which is probably another very popular known vulnerability in AWS if you're using the version one of their CLI, IMDS. And the fact that identity, if you say, for example, if you did not have an identity in Amazon, you can't do anything. But if you have an identity, depending on what that identity can do, which is the overtly permissive roles or how much access that account has, so your admin privileges versus your least privilege. The second one being if the credentials are just not being used properly. So those are some of the most popular reasons. We did a couple of polls in different community groups, and one of the most spoken about thing was lead credentials. So identity is probably the only pro if I wanted to just really boil this down, maybe the reason for the second team to be identity across the board was the fact that identity probably is still the most important thing you can do as a protection layer for securing your AWS account, or maybe even any cloud account, to be honest, so you can prevent a security incident to happen in your cloud. So I agree
That's
with you.
very true. No, and I think it sounds like, AWS is on the same page as well, even though it's something that we've probably been talking about since the inception of, cloud. I think it is still very relevant. I did want to take a moment just to take a pause and just say hello to everyone who's watching us live. If any of you have been to Reinforce and you had some thoughts and comments, feel free to, drop them into comments. We'll like to even, sort of get into those conversations. If you have any questions for us, anything about Reinforce that we could share from our experience, and Ashish is a veteran that he's attended the first one. Happy to. So feel free to, drop them al along, and we'll include them in the conversation as well. I think there was a lot of conversation around the fact that even as the complexity of cloud is increasing with the identity side of things, a lot of organizations are looking for an easy way to digest all that information and have some clear sort of visibility into their identity permissions as well. So that's really talking back into what you were saying, that they really do need, visibility into those things as well. I think the other thing, again, is not something new that we haven't spoken about, but it's all about data was the other theme that came out. People are asking, and I think this is probably, we can, I'm going to say the L word, which is Log4j. So it's probably come from that, people are suddenly, once something like that comes out, everyone's gone, okay, what is my sensitive data? How do I find it? How do I protect it? What have I got into that? And that was something that they were making reference to in the keynote, quite correctly. In my opinion, they said, every data, every stored data should be intentionally controlled and encrypted. What are your thoughts on that? Like, I know you said I am definitely there on the money there, that is something that is still very important. Talking about security guardians, and having security baked in from the beginning. Third theme being data, knowing where my data is.
Yeah, I think that probably links to the confidential computing conversations that most of the cloud service providers have been having as well. It was, I think, in 2021, Steve Schmidt announced the release of AWS Nitro Compute, which was their entry into the confidential computing space. Azure has been doing it. Intel has been talking about it. Like, so there are quite a few players in the market already. And the whole reason for this was data, basically. People wanted to know, A, what kind of data, because even now we don't have a proper DLP solution for the cloud. There is no DLP you can do for cloud effectively. You can do DLP for all your other services, but effective DLP in a cloud context is very rare. So you can use services like AWS MACI, which works really well. I mean, I guess, okay, I won't say really well. It works well for English context of languages, sorry, English sensitive data stored in your S3 bucket. Does not work for non-English, at least the last time I checked, it does not work for non-English PII or PHI, that's public information or public health information. If it's stored in any other language apart from English, it doesn't really work as effectively. And the data, so data is important from there, at least you're trying to protect the data. The second one being, if you are a organization that processes a lot of sensitive data, how can you be sure that you are able to make sure that, hey, the information of the date, or I guess the people you're talking to, say for example, for whatever reason, I as an organization decided I want to talk to Netflix, but I want to do it securely without Amazon Prime having a look at this. And I know I may get a lot of heat from Amazon for this, but if I wanted to do it that way, even though Netflix is primarily running on Amazon, how would I do that? And one of the suggestions for this was confidential computing. A lot of government organizations use it to talk between different government organizations. A lot of banks use it. So there was already a push for data is important. And the other half of data is also data privacy. For people who have been watching a lot of ads from Apple or Samsung, you would have realized they have been talking about privacy for, I guess, if you watch any of the recent ads from Amazon, or sorry, not from Amazon, any of the recent ads from Apple or Samsung. I think Samsung has a Vault now. Amazon has been talking about privacy for a long time. So even at a consumer level, it is becoming quite important for people to care about their data. GDPR and all the other rules that have existed already, they are continuing to strengthen their requirements. So all the cloud service providers have to continue to be more proactive in the way they handle data. Obviously, it's worthwhile calling out the customers have a responsibility here as well. I'm going to throw the shared responsibility model on the table as well. If I have a data that I know is sensitive, I should take the right precautions to classify it. And how do I store it, encrypt it, backup, recovery, all the things that you need to do from a lifecycle management perspective. I think that those are definitely a theme. So on the money, so far, we have the IAM overtly access. We have also got the Security Champions program or Security Guardian program, and the third one being data. So you're on the money so far, Shilpi. Yeah, keep going.
Yep. And it sounds like, I mean, again, I do want to call out, I don't think it is something new and that the industry isn't talking about. When we talk to people on Cloud Security Podcast, often these are the conversations that we are having. And it's good to see that everyone's kind of synced in together. And I think it's a good sort of, I'm going to use your word segue into, I guess, a couple of things that you mentioned. Obviously, shared responsibility was the next theme that kind of came through. So, something interesting that CJ Moses said is that we win and lose together, which I thought was a really good mindset to have. I think security, especially, I know we did the supply chain security videos as well. And again, I think the theme is that to be truly successful as a community in security, there's a lot of things we have to do together. But shared responsibility, again, is one of those things, if it's not well defined, can often mean who takes responsibility for that, and does it mean that nobody is taking responsibility for anything? Another interesting thing that he mentioned is that sh security should not be the office of no, but an office of yes, maybe. So I thought, oh,
Did he
yes,
say maybe?
but no, yes, but I think yes, but or yes, yeah. So I think the concept was more like, find ways to say yes, I think, which I definitely agree with as well. I think, and I think you've always talked about security not being a barrier but an enabler. So I think, again, not something that's new, but it's something that I guess even in 2022 we have to be sort of mindful of as well. I know you mentioned it, Amazon Macy as well. So there were a few updates, and I know we were going to go into the updates a bit later on. So we might go keep going with the themes, and then we might jump into some of the updates, not new products, but new updates to existing services that have come through, and we'll get your thoughts in regards to that as well. Again, if anyone's there listening and just to ask any questions if you do. Zena, thanks for the recap. Perfect. Yeah, I think that's what we wanted to do, sort of bring it to anyone who didn't have the opportunity to attend. And yeah, if you're attending next year, and hopefully we will be as well, I would love to see you in person. So going on to, I think we've had the themes come through. They did do, I guess, again, I'm going to mention Log4j, and I kind of feel like it's one of those really overused things, but they did share their lessons from Log4j. And again, I don't think any of these will be something that is groundbreaking that we are not aware of, but I'll be eager to hear if you feel they've missed anything or something that wasn't talked about. So limit outbound internet access of any kind, so which seems sensible. Keeping all third-party products updated to their latest version and knowing what the impact of the latest version is. Defense in depth was called out as something being really key. So having WAF, ability to hot patch, having a strong hygiene program, and obviously again, least privilege. Having a comprehensive inventory of software and how it is being used. And they did call lots and lots and lots of logging.
Did you
From
say enough
a
logging? There's just
logging,
logging.
I think I might have missed one logging in there. So those were the takeaways from them. And I know, previously in Cloud Security News, we've covered as well. Each of the cloud service providers actually has, done a recap and highlights and how to best remediate for Log4j. And we'll probably put them in the show notes as well. From your perspective, any lessons that you think they didn't cover or they should have covered?
I think I'll probably start by saying this. Most of the conversations we had about the keynote on the ground, a lot of people felt that the keynote was overall quite underwhelming. And not saying that Log4j is not important, but the reason being because it's almost like, yes, it's important to call out Log4j. They even called out ransomware as well. So it's important to call them out, and maybe we can throw some examples of what a ransomware in a cloud looks like. It was also interesting to kind of hear that Log4j and digital supply chain, in I guess to what you said earlier, in our minds it goes hand in hand, because Log4j would technically would not happen if you don't have a third party library. Like if you don't use Java, you would probably not even care about Log4j or the Java library that was affected by it. But if you did, you probably would have realized that the initiative that the executive order from President Biden around having a zero trust architecture, which and then also calling out SBOM, which is a software bill of material. Like those are things which are definitely going to drive a lot of the Log4j or even a future Log4j, whatever that would look like, into an existence where, oh, we need to be more careful about what kind of libraries are we inheriting and what kind of vulnerabilities you may have. Having some kind of an asset inventory of the software that you're running, not just of the servers, but also for the software, what kind of libraries. I think someone explained this to me the best way. They said, like, for people who do not understand the concept of open source libraries and softwares and all that, imagine this way, that you have a product, let's just say Netflix as an example, probably the most popular one. They have a streaming service. The streaming service is their product, is also their best performing dish. If Netflix was a chef, their favorite dish is streaming service. And what ingredients are required to build the best dish is what we would describe as software. Now, each ingredient could also have a subcategory of labels. Hey, this is from, I don't know, some important spice company. I'm going to use another spice from another company, but essentially the idea is the ingredients are the libraries which potentially open you up to Log4j. So you need to be aware of what ingredients are used, or AKA what libraries, open source or paid, are being used, or even third-party suppliers that you have in your Log4j, or not Log4j, in your creation of the software or the recipe. So that probably was missing, and I just wanted to add the SBOM pieces in there as well.
Yeah, and that's a very good call out, because I think, and I always love a food analogy for anyone who knows I'm a big foodie. But also, as you say, it's like knowing what your recipe is, and if any of your ingredients have been, called back because, it was not safe to consume. You kind of, if you think about it that way, it makes sense. You want to make sure that all your ingredients are safe to use, and if they have been recalled, you want to make sure that, you've kind of given them back and things. So I think if we run with that
So basically,
analogy.
FDI or whatever the food authority has approved that it is safe for consumption as well, which is kind of what we
Yeah.
are trying to encourage as
Yeah.
well.
Yeah. I love that analogy. I think I'm going to run with that one. I think one other thing about AWS Reinforce that a lot of people know, obviously it's about the talks, it's about meeting your peer, practitioners, and there are cloud practitioners from, level 100 to level 400 at these conferences, so you have all breadth of conversations. The other really key thing, which people obviously are, gearing for, is what are going to be announcements. It's like the Apple keynote, what is going to be the new feature. And I would say Amazon's probably a little bit like Apple these days, where they're not doing really big upgrades, but it's like little upgrades. Your camera goes up by 2 pixels and things like that. And I wanted to like kind of run past you and get your thoughts in terms of the updates that have been announced and what does it actually mean for people. I know we had the Twitter spaces just before and we got some really good commentary in terms of what the community was feeling in regards to these updates, but probably in an order of priority. So we've had Amazon Guard Duty for a long time, and now there's going to be malware protection available for the EBS volumes, and that malware protection is going to be able to integrate into Security Hub. Now, Guard Duty, for anyone who's not familiar, is AWS's threat detection service, so which monitors your AWS accounts and workloads. What are your thoughts in regards to that? Like, I know, overall the feedback has been positive, but coming from Twitter Spaces and also, your thoughts as a CISO as well, what are your thoughts?
So, I guess for people who may have been hearing the term CWPP, which is Cloud Workload Protection Platform, a lot of people who may be in that phase where they have recently purchased a CWPP or are looking at purchasing a CWPP, they might want to consider the service. So, it may be something which is beneficial from that perspective. So, I think, and I think you mentioned about the whole side scanning thing as well. It's very, I guess, very much like the side scanning service where they don't need an agent to be able to access your EBS volume. They can chill scan it, and they're able to
Yeah.
basically scan. Sorry, yeah, you see what you're
Yeah,
saying?
no, so because I think what everyone was saying is that it's not replacing agent-based CWPP or EPP solutions, but that are projects that are continuously at runtime, but more replacing side-scanning agentless products that may be out there. Again, we don't know what the breadth and implications of those may be, but that's kind of like the initial thoughts
Yeah.
around
So.
that.
Oh, actually, yeah. So for me, I think it makes sense because that's where I think for people who would have seen the CSPM video that I did for four generations, I think one of the things that I call out is using the agentless model of CSPM. And it's pretty awesome to see that Amazon is also going down the path of doing agentless scanning, which also means that pe for people who have been hesitant to have like a malware protection because either it's too expensive or too hard to implement, because these kind of capabilities are pretty advanced in a lot of places. I think we had Andrew Krug on the Twitter space as well. He spoke about earlier forensics is like such an advanced thing, and even having this capability to do a site scan or malware protection, all of this, we used to be for people who are advanced in the usage of cloud. But having that capability also means you're democratizing the cloud security space for a lot of people that even if you don't are maybe not that as advanced as a lot of people, you're still able to use the capability from AWS, which allows you to look at malware protection or malware detection using Guard Duty and kind of have that as a way for enhancing security capabilities in your cloud environment. So I think overall it was quite positive, but the thing being, there are still gaps, probably I'm sure would come out as we kind of go through and using it. At the moment, it's just an announcement. I haven't used it for with vengeance, but I would love to hear from people who probably are using it already now or were part of the preview and would love to share what they found. But I think only time will tell because, like everything else that Amazon announces, usually most things are MVP. So it'll be interesting to see if it's truly worth replacing your CWPP with Amazon Guard Duty. So, yeah, only time will tell.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one thing that my initial thought when I read, like, found out about the update was it sounded very similar to Amazon's Inspector service. But I think if you read into it, and just so that, I thought this clarification was important to me, so it might be, important for the listeners out there as well, that the Inspector is protecting against vulnerabilities at an entry point for attackers, whereas Guard Duty malware protection is more about protecting against malware and actively running workloads. So that's kind of like a good differentiation if you've, heard that and gone, is it very much like Inspector? But yeah, it's
Oh,
not, it's
yes.
just, yes.
So I was going to say it's like, so Inspector is for your build time when you're building the application. And guard duty is real-time threat detection to what you said earlier as well. So once you've deployed the
Exactly.
application and you want to know, hey, is there a malware that is affecting one of my EC2 instances right now? Then that's where this capability can help. But I think they were saying initial capability is also very much focused on the whole cryptojacking and all that as well. So it'd be because guard duty has always been able to pick up on cryptojacking. So I wonder how advanced they have gone and if they would have any threat feeds. Because a lot of the CWPP environment focuses a lot on having the latest feed for what's a potential malware or a virus and keeping an eye off that on your server. And also, how often would this be running? Would this be running every minute or every 8 hours? Or that there's that. I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions. So I think only time will tell. But I think it's a good point to call out that how different it is from Inspector. So in case people would get confused. Now, thank you for sharing
Yeah,
that.
no, definitely. And it sounds like it only scans once guard duty has detected an issue. So it's not doing like a nightly scan of your EC2 ish instances like other
Oh.
side scanners. So there is that differentiation that some of the early users have called out. So yeah, it'd be interesting in terms of what that kind of means for everyone. I think the next bit that probably was in terms of updates was Amazon Detective, which has been there for a while now. I think it was announced in the first Reinforce, if you can remember, Sheesh, when you were there. But it is now available for Elastic Kubernetes Service. So did you want to sort of go into a little bit about what Amazon Detective? I love their names in the sense like Detective, Guard Duty, Inspector. I think they're creating a force there. But in terms of just like people listening in, what is Amazon Detective and having it available for EKS? What does that actually mean for people?
Oh, yeah, sure. So it basically is a security investigation service from Amazon. And the whole point of it is you're able to analyze, investigate, and quickly identify the root cause of potential security issues. At least that's how they describe it, because it's the foundation of it is it collects data from AWS resources, apparently using quote unquote machine learning. From using services like the Guard Duty, Macie, which are other security services, you're able to kind of simplify the process, which helps security teams to easily investigate and quickly find the root cause. Now, obviously, it comes from multiple sources, which did not include EKS before, but now it can look into the EKS audit logs, not just the Guard Duty findings and stuff as well. So I think it definitely is a great addition, especially when you look at the adoption curve for Kubernetes for people who have been following Kubernetes. I think the last year stat of adoption was 70% increase in overall adoption of Kubernetes. So I'm not surprised that they started adding this in there as well. One thing to call out, something is probably some people may think of this as a replacement for a SIEM, which is SIEM, Security Incident and Events Management Service. I won't say it is completely a replacement of it, because you can still technically ingest data, you can transform and load into custom scripts as well. So you can do a lot of things which sounds very SIEM-like, but I would not remove, I don't know, completely replace your SIEM with it. But yeah, I think it's an overall great tool for easy to have visualization, you can do easily investigate a lot of those things that basically you may not have been able to do earlier before. So EKS is a great addition, probably one which is missing. Another one I wish they had added was some more of the access analyzer pieces. I don't think they do access analyzer detection, but if they can do that, that would be pretty cool. I've got a few people coming online. Hey, Chris, what's up? And another LinkedIn user from Brazil. Hey, well, I think it's Roberto, but hey from Brazil as well.
Thanks for joining us. And yeah, if any of you have attended Reinforce, watched any of the talks, if you've got a favorite talk, an update that you loved, hated, or wish had happened, share it with us because that's exactly why we're having this conversation, just so that we can all get up to speed in terms of all the updates that have happened. And in regards to Amazon's EKS, sorry, Amazon Detective, the way I think when it was originally launched, the way I like to explain it to myself was it was a dash of Amazon CloudTrail, VPC flow logs, Amazon GuardDuty, all thrown in together with a dash of, as you said, machine learning, some statistical analysis, and some graph theory. So it hopefully gives you some meaningful answers. So that's the way I kind of explained it to myself.
Sweet. Oh, so I was going to quickly say that the person who was greeting from Brazil was Eric. Hey, thanks for coming in, Eric.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for joining. So I know we've spoken about a couple of the updates, the big ones, and I know you spoke about Amazon Macy before. So Amazon Macy has been around since 2017. And for the longest time, it only really showed you what the location of your data security and data privacy was. Now they've updated it so that it can give you up to 10 examples of your sensitive data found in Amazon. So I know you were previously mentioning that that has kind of goes back into, I guess, the keynote conversation about data and the importance of data and knowing where your sensitive data is. Do you see this as a beneficial addition to what they've done, or is there still, I know you were saying there's still some gaps in terms of languages, obviously, English side of things, but does this kind of give a bit of an improvement in terms of like a step towards the right direction in terms of data?
I definitely feel it does, especially because data, as I kind of mentioned in the beginning, from a data protection perspective, there is a big gap. Not just, well, I wouldn't really throw Amazon under the bus, but there is some responsibility on us consumers of the service as well to be able to understand why do we need to classify data, why do we need to manage data, whether we even have sensitive data in the cloud, how are we going to deal with it if it's in the cloud? How would we do manage the entire data life cycle? So I think it's definitely a step towards the right direction. I think, but there's still a lot of work to be done. But I think it's any little improvement I'll welcome is what I would say.
Definitely. And it sounds like, they are definitely thinking about it, and there were some updates. Again, as all these updates, we haven't put them all to play yet. So it'll be really interesting once people start using them, what are the different things that they find out. The other thing was now around AWS Config. So now that supports compliance scores. It'll give you which of your resources are compliant with a set of requirements, and it's in relationship to the scope of your performance pack. What does that mean from your perspective when you hear that?
Yeah, so conformance pack has been there with AWS Config for some time. It's essentially a set of rules that Amazon would give you with AWS Config. Although I'm not really sure how many people actually use AWS Config because if you turn it on, it's quite expensive. Once the rules start building up, especially if you have like a global environment, which is where some of the business that I've had use, you're probably better off using or sending your logs over to a SIEM solution in most scenarios. So if you are someone who's probably using Config and have been missing out the scoring feature for how do I prioritize a finding, this is a great addition from that perspective. You're able to prioritize the kind of findings that are being identified by Config. So yeah, definitely great.
Amazing. And I think prioritization is, again, a theme that is sort of going around in the industry because I think we all have a lot of different flags. Alert fatigue is something people talk about a lot as well. So anything we can do to find out what are top things we should be paying attention to makes a lot of sense. So as you said, again, something in the right direction, but we'll see how that plays out in regards to how people are using it as well. Something that is getting, I guess, a little bit of conversation happening in the community is just the stuff around AWS Control Tower. AWS Control Tower, came into play a few years ago where people were really looking for that one landing page when you've got multiple, AWS accounts. How do I secure them? How do I govern them? How do I set them up? And again, it's a bit controversial. I know everyone's kind of always said that it's probably not where people have wanted to be, but I know in the Twitter spaces when we were having a chat, Tony brought up a really interesting point that yes, it's maybe it's not where big enterprises would want it to be, or maybe there are some gaps, but for a lot of folks, it's probably headed to a place where it is quite good. Which opinion do you agree with? Are you sitting on the fence with this one?
I think it's funny because we had a conversation on the with Cassandra Young a couple of days ago, yesterday actually, and she spoke about how majority of the things that she found on Control Tower were possible in a much better way outside of Control Tower. So I think for people who want a template for it to be done simply, straightforward for them, I think it's great for them just to kind of go down that path. But if your organization is capable, has team members who can maybe write those two rules themselves, there's a lot of rules available, and you probably can make more focused rules for your organization. Because Control Tower is like a template, and it's AWS practices, security best practices. So you can definitely use that to implement that straight away if you're a small to medium-sized business. But if you're, say, like a medium to a large scale business or an enterprise which have capability for you to be able to do all of these, a lot of these together yourself, you probably don't need the Control Tower service. You probably just should be able to drive the conversation of how what you need and how you need it through the engineering capability of your team as well. So I think it's a broad mix, but depends on the organization you're in. I think any improvement, as I said, little improvement, I'll take it as it's a good sign for businesses that may not have the capability right now, but may have it in the future. So yeah, at least start security early, which is kind of what you said in the beginning was a theme, and this is definitely going to add on to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it also is going back to one of the themes that we were talking about democratizing security as well for those organizations that probably don't have those really robust engineering teams. It's just something that's available to them as a template, and you know, every little improvement kind of helps them get one step ahead in the right direction. The next one, and there are a few updates. I'll probably not go through them too much in detail, but just for a complete viewpoint, I think we've got three more updates that we did want to talk about. So Amazon acquired actually a company called Vicker back in June of last year. And one of the things that they have announced is the availability of Vicker in preview. So what's Vicker? It's meant to be an enterprise communication. It's end-to-end encrypted, and it allows for, you know, like secure messaging, voice, video calling, file sharing, screen sharing, all of those things. So kind of like an end-to-end encrypted Zoom. That's what it sounds like to me. I was quite keen, so I did kind of hop onto the website, and I'm like, okay, what is this all about? Sounds like they are obviously targeting this towards things like military and the government organizations, you know, obviously where you want your data to be protected. I guess we all probably should have our data protected. What are your thoughts, I guess, being a security person on something like Wicca? Is it something to watch for? Interesting things coming? Is it going to compete with Zoom?
I think there's definitely, I guess, insight. And honestly, I definitely feel we've moved on to a hybrid world. I mean, we're running cloud security meetups in a hybrid world as well. So there's a lot of room for tools like Wicker to make an impact. And you're right. Last year, Steve Schmidt just mentioned that they have acquired this company and it should make an impact. This year, it's good to see it come in preview mode. But I would probably say, because a lot of organizations have already gone down the path of Zoom or Google Hangout or whatever, Amazon Chime, and there's another one from Microsoft Teams, I guess. So people have already made a decision. I think this would be really beneficial, probably more for military and government agencies, which is same, which is, if you look at the website of, I think you were showing this to me earlier, if you look at the website of Wicker, it definitely almost subtly hints towards the fact that they're trying to focus more on military as well as government agencies for Wicca. So I definitely feel it would be a hard sell for them to have impact in the enterprise space in general, just because I think a lot of people have already established certain providers in the space, and I don't see why someone would want to change it, especially as we move towards hybrid world. A lot of people are even trying to go away from online conversations as much as possible. So I think it may not have an impact on the enterprise space, but for military and government agencies, which still rely heavily on our communications are encrypted, and some of these, I guess the reason why I keep talking about military and government agencies, encryption is important for them. But in a lot of, say, private sector companies, encryption is important. But I don't know how many people are focusing on paying the extra premium when, say, your conversations for them to be encrypted, your provider wants you to pay extra. So whereas a government agency would be like, oh, why not? I think that should be part of the thing. So yeah, that's probably the impact. That probably there is the difference.
Definitely. That's very true. And I think it's also going to be interesting to see how, you know, the companies that we are using, the Zooms, Teams, and you know, Google Hangouts of the world, I'm guessing they will become more and more secure. So they might start putting, you know, versions of encryption there, because there are a lot more sensitive conversations that are happening in these space. Earlier on, it was just probably something that, you know, you did for your private conversations, but now, you know, most organizations are being run on that. So that it'll be interesting to see how they shift towards a more secure environment as well. So something to watch out for. I guess the other one that they have announced in preview again is the AWS Marketplace Vendor Insights. So it's going to be a third-party software risk assessment process, and it's going to enable sellers to make security compliance information available through the AWS Marketplace. So essentially, the vendors will have to check off about 150 security credentials that they were talking about, and it'll show the security certifications and information on a real-time basis. So that to me, and I guess I probably haven't been on the front where I've, had to, sort of onboard a lot of vendors, but I would imagine as a security leader, that could be really beneficial as long as I guess it's impartial and you're getting to see all the vendors that you want out there. Does this sound like something that's going to save you a lot of time?
It would definitely save the procurement process, as CJ Moses called out. It would definitely reduce the time because traditionally, a lot of, well, I don't know if maybe we haven't spoken about this, but I think a lot of the conversations that we were having with vendors was a lot of people migrated towards AWS Marketplace over the last couple of years because they realized it's so much more easier to get procurement happen in an enterprise or in a kind of company that's a lot of processes through Marketplace because quote unquote it comes under your Amazon bill. So you don't have to say go, I don't know, if we were to make cloud security meet up like a big product or whatever, and we wanted to sell it to the biggest enterprise out there, we have to go through the procurement process of getting it added. And there's like a whole review process. And if you're not in the if you're not a part of the panel, you can't get in. It takes like 6 months, 7 months. But if you are already in the AWS Marketplace, it's literally a click, and suddenly now you have cloud security meetup happening around here, or cloud security academy, as we have the education piece as well. You can have that in a matter of a few minutes, and it's classified under your AWS bill. Now, the reason this is important, and I definitely wanted this to be highlighted, was because the digital supply chain, as you spoke about earlier, is comprised of third parties. And what the
That's right.
marketplace is doing is it's opening up your AWS environment to third parties, which are there, and you may or may not know that your organization is already using it. Now, using the insight, at least that opens up the door for, I think they said every 7 days, you get an update of whether the security certification of the vendor is still being validated, which is a great initiative because technically, the reason why we had the challenge with, I guess, all these third-party supply chain was also because the scale of it was just too hard for a lot of organizations to manage. And they definitely found it harder to do security reviews of these third parties. So I think this is a great move because what this means is now people would be a lot more confident to say, yep, use AWS Marketplace because you can use insights to make sure the security compliance of the vendors that are there on the marketplace is definitely being checked by Amazon, which can do that at a scale which a lot of organizations cannot. So I think it's a great move.
That's true. It's kind of almost like a benchmarking, like, you're kind of comparing apples with apples, I would say. So, yeah, as you said,
Yeah, and maybe an
at least.
easier choice as well. If you have to compare two apples and one is like a high grade apple, which has all the sort of security certifications, and the other one doesn't have as many. So
No, that's
maybe.
true. And it'd be interesting to hear from a vendor's perspective as well in terms of, how this impacts them as well. I think moving on to, I think another program, and I think it goes into that very vendor partner space, is the AWS security competency thing for partners have been around for ages. I think I know in some of your previous roles, you've kind of been very close to it, helping partners get that security competency. They have now kind of relaunched that, and it's got eight new consolidated categories. And looking at the categories, none of it is really a surprise. And I think it kind of comes a nice, beautiful circle because we kind of started with the key themes, and now we've gone into this competency partners thing. And they're talking about things like application security, compliance and privacy, data protection, identity and access management. We spoke about that before. Infrastructure security, threat detection and response, perimeter protection, and core security. So a lot of it, is very in line with, the key themes that we were talking about. So they've done a relaunch of that. Do those categories, are any of them a surprise for you, or they all make sense? I know, like, I am obviously, we spoke about data protection. Core security, they're talking about more sort of like a holistic viewpoint, which again makes sense, but any of them sound like a bit of a surprise, or is there one you go, oh, they've kind of completely missed this vertical and ignoring it for whatever reason?
No, I think it definitely makes sense from a adoption perspective. So I think it's good. It's a good thing. So overall, quite positive, quite happy with it.
Amazing. Perfect. So I think that was pretty much, I guess, the overall, I guess, recap of AWS Reinforce from our end. We spoke about the key themes that were there. So just to quickly recap, that was around IAM and, your permissions, making sure they're not overtly permissive, making sure you know where your sensitive data is. There's a lot of conversation about security being baked in from the beginning. Of the conversation and just having a holistic view in terms of having different layers of protection for your security within your organization. We went through the updates, which I won't go through again because I'm sure everyone's heard it, but obviously you can, re-listen to this and we will drop in, links in the podcast show notes as well. I did want to take a moment just to thank everyone who's joined us here, but also everyone who made the effort to come and say hello to Ashish and I at Reinforce. That is something that is, we really appreciate and, we kind of keeps it going. So thank you for everyone who did say hello, took a picture with us. And for anyone who we missed, hopefully we'll catch you at the next Reinforce, or if you're going to be at Black Hat and DEF CON, we'll be there as well. So come and say hello. Any questions from anyone who's in there or any parting thoughts, feel free to drop them through. But Ashish, from your end, any last takeaways or comments around Reinforce?
No, I'm just looking forward to what the whole Security Champions program means for the cloud security space. If we start converging DevSecOps and cloud security and DevOps cloud security kind of thing becomes like a one whole holistic thing, which I always thought was going to be like a future thing, like 10, 20 years in the future. But this, if it happens sooner, because I mean, the Security Guardian was like a 2-minute thing right towards the end of Steve Schmidt's keynote last year. And this year it was within the first 10 minutes. So clearly there's a lot of impact that's going to come in from, or at least a push from their side to start having Security Champions program also include not just application security, but also cloud security. So I think I'm looking forward to what this means for the industry. And maybe all the experience of DevSecOps that we've been kind of carrying may actually have a benefit in there and the whole product security side of things as well. But otherwise,
Definitely.
I want to resonate what you kind of said. I reiterate in, thank you so much, everyone who came in and said hello to us as well. It was really awesome to kind of see people in person, give you guys a hug, and give you guys and girls a hug as well. And I think maybe might have been the most highlighted fact for us at Reinforce, be able to hug all the community members in the cloud security space who came in and knew about the podcast. And yeah, I think I was super excited by it. Definitely was my highlight. All these highlights are great, but I think the fact that we got to meet you, that was the best part. So thank you so much again for doing
Definitely.
that.
Amazing. And I know you like to end your podcast with a fun section, so I'm going to throw in a bit of a fun section for you. What was, and I know a lot of people have said the best part about AWS Reinforce is the people. From your perspective, what has been the best part of AWS Reinforce?
I think it was definitely for me as well as the people. I think the hallway con, getting to meet so many people who are in the cloud security space, get to hear their day-to-day experience and conversations around the fact that what did they think about a session, what was the best session. I definitely feel hallway con is probably the most value because, and if for people who maybe not going this year or maybe are going next year, I would still say if you go to any conference, whether it's security or developer conference or whatever, focus more on meeting people because those are connections that would land in, say, you learning something new tomorrow or finding a job or it could be many more things. Because most of the talks these days, if you were to, I mean, it wasn't the case before, but now most of those talks are going to be on YouTube. But what would not be on YouTube is the interaction you would have with people over there. So whether it's at the lunch table or a water cooler or the after party, wherever you get to meet people, definitely maximize the opportunity of saying hello to people and building good connections. So that was
Amazing.
definitely my takeaway.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for everyone who's joined us today at the live stream. If you weren't at the AWS Reinforce, as we did say, most of the talks are there live on YouTube as well. And we will share all the links over here. But no, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for coming and saying hello at Reinforce. We did run AWS Month at Cloud Security Podcast. So if you missed any of those episodes, they might tie into a lot of these conversations. So thank you so much for everything and all your support. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah.